This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. Former Missouri Senator Jack Danforth has been outspoken in his concerns about contemporary American politics. He's denounced the man he once endorsed for the Senate, Josh Hawley. He said the Senate should have convicted former President Donald Trump in his impeachment trial, and he said the Republican Party is a grotesque caricature of what it once was. The senator just spoke at Rockhurst University for its Visiting Scholar Lecture Series, and we thought it'd be a good time to catch up with him here on Up to Date. Senator Danforth, always good to have you on the show. Welcome back.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be with you.
Now, we have another president who's upside down when it comes to his job approval ratings. Former President Trump appears to be gearing up for a third consecutive run for the presidency. The Republican Party, which you've described as nowhere close to what it needs to be, appears to be unbending. How are you keeping your head up these days, Senator?
That's a good question, Steve. I'm normally a very upbeat person, but it's very discouraging. Politics has changed so dramatically recently, and it's not just, you know, a little different from what it used to be. It's the opposite, really. Mm-hmm. The Republican Party is the opposite of what it was, and I don't know. I wish I had a quick answer on how to get it back on track, but I really don't.
You know, you serve with Joe Biden in the Senate. What do you make of his performance so far?
I'm surprised. You know, a lot of people, the media people, asked me during the campaign what I thought of Biden. And I served with him for 18 years in the Senate. I was never on a committee with him, so I didn't have a really close relationship with him. During the Clarence Thomas confirmation hearings, I was, of course, around him for a period of months. Mm-hmm. Let's say he's no James Madison, you know. I mean, you would not call him some sort of political philosopher. But my take on Joe was that he was a politician in the best sense of the word. That is, he was a person who really liked to kind of work things out and see how he could bring people together and accommodate people to the best of his ability. That's not how he's functioned as a president. He's really moved quite far to the left. And dramatically so. And for example, the Republicans in Congress right now have no role to play in the mm-hmm. Biden scheme of things. So I'm surprised that he hasn't been more of a sort of politician, and that he's become more of a sort of an ideological representative of the more progressive wing of the Democratic Party.
You know, he campaigned on, and he was elected, I think, in large part on this idea that he was a little bit more of a moderate Democrat than many of the others. Why do you think he's gone as far left as he has with these, you know, trillion-dollar proposals, sort of one after the other? What do you think he's reaching for?
It's I don't know. You know, I don't know what's going on in his mind. It's just it's very, very surprising to me that it's gone this way. It's certainly not at all what I thought was going to happen.
You said the other night at Rockhurst that he was trying to hit the ball out of the park rather than hitting a few singles. You would have preferred to see him hit singles, Senator?
Well, I think that's when politics functions. It's not sort of one side saying, okay, we're just going to ram through everything that's in our wildest dreams. I think that politics, when it functions the way I think it should function, tends to be more incremental and more trying to find out, okay, is there some sort of middle ground? Is there some sort of way that we can advance what we think is the right cause, but not just rolling the other side over?
I mean, I guess his argument would be that you know, the country needs these massive infusions of money to fix massive problems, and the time has come to deal with it. That's, if he was sitting at the table with us, that's what he'd say.
Yeah, it is. And to a point, that's right. I mean, dealing with COVID, that was clearly correct. You know, I mean, we got that program. And I think that there are areas, I've always thought that infrastructure was a subject that could be worked out between all parties, and you could come together for an infrastructure program, which was in fact done. But this reconciliation program, which is, okay, if we've got 50 votes, then we win. And it really is a very major reworking of the relationship between the federal government and the American people.
Mm-hmm. What are your concerns about the presidency itself, Senator? And we now have had two consecutive presidents who have more Americans disapproving of their performance than we do approving of their work. Is there a consequence to that?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm not a sociologist, but my sort of basic view is that most people are not just waiting with bated breath for the latest miracle to be handed down from these geniuses in Washington. Mm-hmm. Most people just want to live their lives, and they think that government is certainly useful and it performs an essential purpose, but it's not the be all and end all, and it's not the miracle worker. And so I think that there's kind of a limited expectation of government. And then when it's presented as sort of in a breathless fashion, sort of in the 24-hour news cycle where, you know, every program begins breaking news.
Right, right.
That creates a kind of an expectation or a sense of government that leads to disappointment.
You know, at Rockhurst the other night, you called January 6th the darkest day in American history. For a lot of people, that may be obvious, but why did you feel that way, Senator?
Well, because it was internal, you know. It was this, like a friend of mine said, well, he thought that it wasn't as bad as 9/11, but I think it's worse because 9/11 was from the outside. This is from the inside. Mm-hmm. And it's an upheaval within against the American system, the American constitutional structure. And I think that's very serious. I think what's happening now is very serious. And I think that that's the problem with the claim that the election was stolen. It's people say, well, that's the big lie. You know, the election was stolen. Well, it's worse than a big lie. I mean, people can sort of accept the fact that people in politics lie or exaggerate or whatever. But this is really an undermining of the whole constitutional system and the foundation, the foundational principle that's in our Declaration of Independence, that governments derive their just power from the consent of the governed. Well, to say that an election was stolen is to say that the President of the United States has not received the consent of the governed and therefore he's illegitimate. That's a very, very, very destructive point of view, and it's more than a point of view. It's a very destructive attack, and it's had enormous effect. I mean, so polls show that 2/3 of Republicans now believe that the election was stolen. Well, if they believe it now, they're certainly going to believe it in the future also. So it's very, very damaging. Hmm.
You know, and yet so many Republicans these days appear adamantly opposed to crossing Donald Trump. What do you make of that? I mean, the stranglehold that he continues to have, at least on a majority, maybe a big majority of the Republican Party.
Yeah, I think for people in elective office or people who want to be elected, they want to succeed. And the way they want us, the way that they see the path to succeeding is getting his support so that they can win primary elections. So in our state, this is really a change from my day, because when I first started out in politics, the Democratic Party was by far the majority party.
Right.
Now in our state, it's sort of assumed that if you win the Republican nomination, you're elected. So it's all in the primary system. It's all winning the primary election. And the way to win the primary election is to appeal to the base, the true believers of each party. And the base of the Republican Party is now Trump. So you have this situation now in the Senate campaign as it's evolving for the U.S. Senate for Roy Blunt's seat, that it's kind of a, how Trump-like can we seem?
Mm-hmm.
So it's all a bunch of mini Trumps running against each other.
Is there, how do you break that cycle?
You know, I think that it's worth thinking about the whole the primary system, how primary elections are conducted. And there is an idea that's being floated, and that, to me, it's a very interesting idea, and it's called Final Four voting. Hmm. So everybody who's wants to run, they file to run for, say, the Senate, and then there's just one ballot. There's not a Democratic ballot and a Republican ballot. There's one ballot, and then the top four people run against each other in the general election. And there's ranked voting for that, so that if there's not a majority, the person who finishes fourth in the final four is those votes are taken from that person and allocated to the other candidates. So I believe it's a good idea. It seems like a good idea to me, but right as we have it now, the center of American politics doesn't exist. And it's all about who can appeal to the primary voters. And in my party, if you're not Trump-like, you're going to be primaried. I mean, this is Trump himself has been endorsing people who run in primary elections, who is most loyal to him.
You want to see him defeated in 2024, Senator, and defeated handily. No question about that, right?
Yeah, and I kind of imagine what I'm going to do if I go to the polls, and I've never voted for Trump. I've never voted for him in a primary. I've never voted for him in a general election. I never would vote for Trump. And I think he's really got to be repudiated. But I really hope that the alternative is not sort of the Bernie Sanders view of the Democratic Party. I think the Democrats could do the country a big favor if they were to nominate, say, an Eisenhower type or somebody who could appeal to independents and to anti-Trump Republicans, and not just, you know, how far can we go to the left.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. I'm visiting with former Missouri Senator Jack Danforth. I'm just wondering, as you watch the last 4 years, in watching Republican leaders react to Donald Trump, what obligation do you think those leaders had during the Trump years to speak out more forcefully about him? Because, the lack of dissent on policy after controversial stand after controversial stand was pretty dramatic. At least that's how it struck me.
I think it's important for the Republican Party to detach itself from Donald Trump. And I think it's important for the country. I think that this Trump phenomenon is, as I've said, you know, very, very destructive for our country. But I also think that in the cause of winning elections, it's important for Republicans to detach themselves. I mean, Trump is not the future of the Republican Party if we intend to be a national party. We can be a regional party. We can be a party that's very strong, let's say, in our state, or strong in the South, or maybe the parts of the West. But we're not going to be a national party as long as we're Trump. And we proved that. You know, I mean, Trump lost the popular vote in 2016 by 3 million votes. He lost the popular vote in 2020 by 7 million votes. That's moving in the wrong direction. There is no reason why our party should not have picked up, not have won at least one of the Senate seats in Georgia. Trump made it all about him, not about policies. And so we lost both of those, and we lost the U.S. Senate. So it's just from the standpoint of practical politics, the Republican Party, if it's attached to Trump and led by Trump, it's going to be a loser. We're going to be a losing party. If Trump is the presidential candidate in 2024, he's going to lose. He's going to lose big, and he's going to pull a lot of Republicans down with him.
You say one more thing about Donald Trump. You say that he is not conservative. Why do you say that?
Because conservatives are committed to the Constitution, and the attack on the legitimacy of the presidency and the legitimacy of the election is an attack on the Constitution. And conservatives believe in the, you know, in the constitutional system, including the court system, and that when courts decide controversies, those decisions are final and they must be obeyed by all parties. So Trump loses 61 cases in federal and state courts. He tries to get certiorari in the U.S. Supreme Court. He's turned down twice. They have lost in court, and then they act as though, well, so what? So if we lose in court, we're going to take the battle elsewhere. We're going to take it to state election officials. We're going to take it to Congress, to the vice president. Ultimately, we're going to take it to the streets. And it's an undermining. It's really a direct attack on the constitutional system. That is not conservative. That's really quite radical.
Former Missouri Senator Jack Danforth is my guest. You've called your support of Josh Hawley for the U.S. Senate seat in Missouri the biggest mistake you've ever made. And what I'm wondering is, have you had a chance to talk to him since you made that remark? Is there anything of a relationship still there, Senator, or where does all that stand?
No, I have not talked to Josh since he took office, as a matter of fact, which is fine. I mean, I wasn't expecting to be, you know, his mentor or anything. I simply supported him for election. And I thought he was really promising, you know. I mean, he's so smart. And after he was elected, I wrote him a letter and I said, you know, you have an opportunity to be kind of what Pat Moynihan was in my day. Pat was a liberal Democrat,
right?
And Josh is a conservative Republican. But I thought he had the ability to add that intellectual heft to the Senate, which was really very constructive. But my goodness, he's not what I thought he was going to be.
What do you think happened there? I mean, he's not a Pat Moynihan. I think anyone would agree to that. But what happened there? Is it just blind ambition?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. You know, I can't put myself in somebody else's head. And I don't know whether he was always this way or whether he changed. He had a professor and a mentor at Stanford, very, very well-known professor named David Kennedy. And Kennedy was a big believer in Josh. And then Kennedy was asked, well, what do you make of this? And Kennedy said, I was bamboozled. And that's how he feels about it. I don't know. You know, you can't, it's impossible to put yourself in somebody else's head, but I can just say that it's very surprising. And I feel responsible. I mean, I really believe, I'm not really patting myself on the back. I'm admitting the complicity in all this, but I really believe Josh Hawley would not have been elected to the U.S. Senate, but for me. So I feel responsible for this thing.
You told a story again the other night at Rockhurst that really jumped out at me, and it's a story about when you first were elected to the Senate, and you had been sworn in, and then there was a small dinner party out in Washington, and just immediate family members, you know, that kind of thing, at a hotel somewhere in D.C., and at that party, you invited Tom and Barbara Eagleton to the dinner. Tom Eagleton, at the time, being the other Missouri senator, he was a Democrat, you were a Republican. And Tom Eagleton turned to you at one point during that meal and brought up your father to you and engaged you in a conversation about your dad. What did he say to you, and what did you make of that moment?
Well, I barely knew him, and this is my first day in the Senate. So we had this dinner party. And so we invited Tom and Barbara Eagleton to our little family dinner. And there weren't any speeches or anything, but he just turned to me and he said, "I know you wish your father were alive." And I thought, that set the tone of the relationship that I had with Tom Eagleton. And it was just wonderful. And he was, until his death, he was my friend. I gave a eulogy at his funeral, you know, and it was just marvelous relationship. I, a Republican, Thomas, a Democrat, I was conservative. He was a liberal, and we voted differently on a lot of things, but we had this great personal relationship, and neither of us ever tried to embarrass or undercut the other guy. And what's interesting about it is that I still hear from people who sort of remember the old days that how much people, Republicans, Democrats, whatever, appreciated that relationship. It was good. And it was special because of Tom, and he was such a good guy. But in those days, there was, there was a degree of overlap and there was certainly personal relationship and personal friendships in the U.S. Senate that I doubt exist today. And they crossed party lines. It was not your personal friends were not necessarily in your party. And that's very good, you know. It's a very, very good lubricant to help make politics work if you like the other guy. And now I think sort of the tone of politics is not only do people not like each other, they hate each other on the basis of their politics.
I was going to ask you, you know, you've been away from the Senate for a few years now, but are you aware of any Democrat-Republican relationship that's anywhere remotely similar to what you and Tom Eagleton once had?
I counted up how many people are in the Senate who were there when I was there, and the number is six. So I don't know. I really don't know these people, and I can't answer the question, but I doubt it. I think that the whole tone of politics now is different. So, you know, they ask people, you know, there are polls, would you like your would you like your daughter to marry a Republican or a Democrat or whatever? And people say, no, no. Well, I mean, it's ridiculous, really, but that's where we are.
Hey, before you go, just a final thing. You're working on a push toward reconciliation involving the church writ large, I think. I know Adam Hamilton of the Church of the Resurrection out in Leawood is involved in this effort.
Yeah.
What are you doing? What are you aiming for? Where's all that going?
Well, at Christmas time last year, the Church of the Resurrection, Adam Hamilton's church, had this campaign, and they had yard signs and T-shirts, and they simply said, love your neighbor. And so Adam and a guy named Matt Malone, who's a Jesuit editor of America Magazine, Catholic priest, and I and Michael Curry, who's the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church, have been thinking about, okay, how can we use that theme and take it national and add to it with a set of, okay, if parish church congregations were into, let's try to get people to really love each other, even your enemies, what do you do? And then what are the steps in doing that? Instead of maybe, you know, take a Republican to lunch or something. So that's what we're thinking about, you know, and we've got, I'm not sure where it will go, but the notion is, you know, in some churches, I'm an Episcopalian, in our church, we do what we call exchange the peace, which is during the service, you turn to each other and you say the peace of the Lord. And how do you exchange the peace, not just within your sanctuary, but how do you exchange the peace with Americans and with your neighbors at large? So that's the idea.
That's Jack Danforth, a former U.S. Senator from Missouri. Senator, always good to visit with you. Thanks so much for your time today. Always much appreciated.
Thanks, Steve.